quite an unusual device. Is it some sort of pump?
I am Flood. Glad to meet you.
Hey, someone's coming!
What's up, Nintendo nerds? Welcome to N-Express, PopOptics.com's Nintendo podcast. That's right, PopOptic.com. It's officially here. It has finally arrived. And with it, a whole bunch of great articles that you should go check out, a new look, and this, the first episode of N-Express on PopOptic. So we're really excited about that. With me today is Aaron Santos.
Hello.
Ricky D.
Hello, everybody.
And the returning guest champion, Patrick Murphy.
Hey, guys.
Awesome. Thanks for joining us again, Patrick.
Always glad to be here.
It's going to be a crowded show today.
Yeah, very crowded. we'll explain that a little later. But why don't we go ahead and hop into Nintendosage, the weekly Nintendo news segment of our show, where we've got a lot to talk about. We've got some indie games coming out. We've got a whole new line of 3DSs coming out. You guys, during PAX, a lot was announced. Some release dates for all the indies that were there. Oddworld is coming to the Wii U.
Surprisingly. I was really surprised about that one.
Well, that's exciting. I mean, I feel like...
No, it's exciting. Yeah, yeah. Don't get me wrong. It's exciting. But I like... It's interesting that you know, something that's been so... Well, not core to like... I guess like I just never pictured it showing up on a Nintendo for some reason. I just never I thought I would see the day of an Oddworld game on Nintendo.
Wait, now is this a new Oddworld game?
No, I think this is the original, like the first Oddworld, but you know,
it's a remake, right?
Yeah, a remake of the original PlayStation classic.
Right.
But yeah, interesting.
Could be really cool, though. I think it's a good fit. I think that Nintendo has one of the best lineups of indies right now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. They're doing a great job of bringing a lot of interest in the indie games, especially like Kerbal Space Program, one that I'm pretty familiar with on the PC already. So, interesting.
So I guess these games are going to get released in 2016 at this point, right?
Some of them, yeah, because we already have a pretty solid lineup of games coming out. Or that have come out. Runbow just came out last week. So we've got a lot of indies on our plate already. I wouldn't be surprised if they saved a lot of them.
But that's amazing. That's what I love about the Wii U and the 3DS is the indie games. Mm-hmm. I mean, of course, the first-party games. But yeah, I'm just like, remake? Reboot? Remastered? Are you sure it's a remake? Like,
I think it's a straight from the ground up remake, right? Mm-hmm.
Are we talking about Oddworld?
Yeah, Oddworld, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's been the engine from the ground up has been remade.
Okay. That sounds pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're going to talk about PAX Prime in our middle section during the main event, because Tim, you actually went to PAX Prime. Yeah. But we're going to dance around the news from PAX Prime. So what else can we talk about? Can we talk about the Shovel Knight amiibo, which we talked about last week, but it's now been confirmed?
It's official now.
Mm-hmm.
This is interesting because it's an amiibo. Mm-hmm. It's clearly for the Wii U and I guess the 3DS, right? But it's not really an amiibo like the other amiibo because you can't use it on games like Smash or Mario Party or the Zelda game, which we always forget to mention, Hyrule Warriors, and so on and so forth. Like, I'm not entirely sure what the purpose of this amiibo is, apart from it being a collectible.
Well, it does work on Shovel Knight, and there's some DLC that comes with that amiibo, I believe, right? Mm-hmm. Doesn't the amiibo unlock DLC?
Right, but only specifically for Shovel Knight. From my understanding, that's not going to be used for any other game.
My honest guess, notice they haven't clarified all of the characters in Super Mario Maker. I think Shovel Knight would fit right in there.
Absolutely. And, you know, this is the first third-party amiibo. You know, this isn't being sold by Nintendo. So that might have, you know, if that probably plays into why it doesn't necessarily work on Nintendo games.
And I wouldn't be surprised if they announced that he's the Smash character and he will work in there with an update.
Yeah, but see, that's what I'm wondering, because the thing is, it's like Patrick said, this is the first third-party amiibo, so I'm not sure if they had to buy the license for Shovel Knight and or if Yacht Club paid Nintendo and or if they're just getting a percentage. Like, I'm not sure how it works on a business side of things.
From what we know, Nintendo is not producing the Shovel Knight amiibo.
That's right. And I believe they did break it down. There is a percentage deal going on here. Obviously.
I think Yacht Club is paying for this one to come out.
So basically, Yacht Club's paying for the amiibo brands, like calling it an amiibo, but they could have made an action figure.
Yeah.
Or a statue, whatever you want to call it, a collectible for Shovel Knight, the main character, and released it. But in order for it to, like, is it because Nintendo has the rights for the actual technology that's within the amiibo that, you know, the, whatchamacallit chip?
The near field.
Yeah, NFC chip.
Yeah, exactly. There you go.
Right. So does Nintendo have sort of rights to... I guess not, because what am I saying?
Skylanders and Disney
Infinity, yeah. I think it's cool that they open it up to third-party developers, or specifically these indie developers, but what do they gain from it?
So in an interview, with one of the guys from Yacht Club says that they licensed the amiibo technology from Nintendo.
Yeah.
And Nintendo has been overseeing the entire thing, but Yacht Club is the one that is manufacturing and distributing. So well,
it makes a lot of sense.
So I'm sure there's some licensing fees involved there, but that might be it.
Okay, so yo, hold up. So you're telling me that if the Shovel Knight amiibo gets released and there's a shortage of stock right away, we don't blame Nintendo, we blame Yacht Club?
That's absolutely right. From everything I've heard, other people have brought that very same topic up, Ricky, and Yacht Club will be the one to blame. And from what I understand, they're also only producing it in very limited quantities, so there will be a shortage.
Good luck getting it.
Oh my god. Guys, I just completed my collection. You're killing me.
It's not official amiibo. It's not a Nintendo amiibo. I mean, it's official amiibo. It's not a Nintendo amiibo. You could just have a Nintendo amiibo collection.
No, I need Shovel Knight. He's like my favorite.
plus, you never know in the future, like, what Nintendo... I'm sure some way, somehow, they're going to find some way to incorporate Shovel Knight into some of their games down the road, so...
Yeah, like Tiff said, it's going to be part of, like, Super Mario Maker, guaranteed.
Yeah, absolutely. And didn't you guys last week talk about how the odds of Shovel Knight being voted as the player in Smash that we've, you know, that we've heard about? I mean, there's a good possibility that already happened, and they're saving that information. But the fact that they're going through with this amiibo, come on.
And so what's up with Nendo droids? Or Nendoroids?
Nendroids?
Y'all know what I'm talking about? No?
No.
I'm not familiar with that one.
It's sort of like an amiibo. It's like a little collectible, a little sort of action figure statuette that they're selling for Nintendo characters like Kirby and Mega Man. Only they cost like $50.
Yeah, these are really, really interesting like collectible figures. And I guess they're popular in Japan right now. And so Nintendo just licensed out their characters to be used. But it's not exclusively Nintendo that has these little figures. They're basically, I believe the word's chibi, like little chibi versions of all your favorite characters.
Okay, so it's sort of like pop figures.
Yeah, it's very similar to pop figures. That's more.
Okay, so it's not going to compete with amiibo or anything.
No.
Okay.
That would be just idiotic to compete against amiibo. I don't know. It's like...
I'll tell you what, if I was a third-party developer out there right now, I would want a piece of that amiibo pie. I mean...
That makes sense. That's why Yacht Club must have done this. I mean, look at how fast amiibos sell and how much demand there is for them. Mm-hmm. So you take your really popular game and make it an amiibo figure, it's just like rolling up the money.
Yo, you can take a popular Nintendo podcast and make amiibo figures for the hosts.
Yeah, I'd buy one.
So you know what the sad part is? I don't even know if I would buy myself.
I could buy an Aaron and a Ricky and just sit there talking to them when we're doing the podcast.
I'm going to make a third party of my own. That'll be the outsider one. I'm going to be the Shovel Knight of the NX Express podcast.
We'll do that. We'll do a Kickstarter and get people to give us money to produce our own amiibos. Get the licensing.
It's funny because our Nintendo Dosage segment is supposed to be like the shortest segment of our entire podcast, and lately it feels like it's the longest, and I still have a few more things that I want to bring up. So they announced that they're going to release the smaller 3DS model in North America. Don't you think it's a little too late at this point?
No, not with winter coming up. I think this is the perfect time. I think it's really, really clever. It's like one final hook for the 3DS. I think this is maybe the last model we'll ever see of it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But this is it. Like, this is how you try to get the rest of the players, especially like people like me that really want those collectible faceplates and all that. I wrote an article a couple months ago about how mad I was that the smaller version wasn't coming out right away. Mm-hmm. And I said that the only reason I would get an XL is if I could find the Majora's Mask one and get it. I totally did. I have the Majora's Mask one, so I'm done. Like, that's it for me. But I'm still looking at this one, and I'm like, oh, but what faceplates are coming our way?
Do you think that's really a major selling point? Because they really haven't done anything with the new 3DS anyway. Other than Xenoblade, there's nothing that requires it. And I'm like you, Tim. I bought the Majora's Mask one, and that's it.
But you know, I completely agree. They haven't done anything with the new model, including having exclusive games. Like, how many exclusive games do we actually have for the new model? Two, I think?
Maybe. What is the other one? There's Xenoblade and...
Monster Hunter. No, Monster Hunter.
No, Monster Hunter was... Yep.
So it's Xenoblade Chronicles 3D.
I think that's the only one. And so is there really a demand for the new 3DS? I mean, they can bring it over. If it's cost-effective, sure, bring it over. Why not? See if you sell some.
But I think this new 3DS is going to be, what, $220?
This is the point I'm trying to make. It's like you're releasing the smaller model a year later. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, you haven't given anyone any reason to buy the new system because there's only one exclusive game for the new system. Mm-hmm. So why would you buy a model that's the exact same size just because you want a faceplate? Just put the faceplate on your previous model.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, these are made for this specific 3DS. I don't know if it's so easy to exchange the faceplate since that's like a very specific feature of this new 3DS. Mm-hmm. Plus, with the new 3DS, we do get an extra battery life. We have better face recognition features so that the 3D will always work better. And so there's features that make it worthwhile, not to mention that it processes better and faster. So it's a better product overall. So I don't think there's a reason not to get it if you haven't bought a 3DS yet. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there's a huge reason to swap out if you already have one, though.
And that's the deal. Like, how many people who haven't bought a 3DS one are going to be lured in by the new 3DS with the smaller version with the faceplates? Like, is that going to be enough to get these people in? I don't know. They would have already...
I don't know, man. I'm not even interested in the faceplates. I mean, sure, they're kind of cool and all, but the thing is, I actually like the bigger model. I kind of think it's the perfect size, in all honesty, so I don't need the smaller model. Did you guys see the bundle for Xenoblade Chronicles X, the special edition, which is confirmed for North America?
Yes.
Dude, it is sweet. It even comes with a book, a 100-page book of concept art.
Wow.
It looks pretty good. What is it? It's $80 or $90? I can't remember.
$89. Comes with a bunch of bonus material. It looks beautiful. I want it. And you know what, though? Splatoon cost me $80. So I would pay an extra $10 just to get the bonus material, including that 100-page book.
Mm-hmm. God, did Splatoon was $80 in Canada?
Yes. Yeah,
oh, my God. It was the regular Wii U game, probably. It was $60 here, $59.99.
It was like $89 with tax.
So like this $89, are we talking about like U.S. Xenoblade Chronicles X, or is this a Canadian price?
I believe, I know it's the U.S. price for sure.
Because obviously then, if it's $89 for you guys, then it's going to be, what, $100 for us?
Who knows? Are all Wii U games $89?
No.
But things are priced differently, so who knows how it's going to be.
Yeah, no, I think Splatoon is the most I've paid for a video game in quite some time. I'm talking about years.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, Bayonetta was expensive, but that is because Bayonetta came with Bayonetta 1.
Two games, yeah.
Right, and so I think Bayonetta also cost me $89 with tax, but I mean, every Wii U game I have, I think I paid roughly about 70 max, like usually hovering around the $60 area. There's some that they sell for like $40, you know, like
Captain Toad was a cheap one, I remember.
Yeah.
Now the only question is, like, how much of your life are you going to devote to Xenoblade? Because that game looks incredible, and it's probably going to take 100 hours to beat.
From what I hear, it's like 200 hours of gameplay.
Yeah, potential? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think I've heard the main quest only is 100 hours, which is insane. And the world looks massive, just unbelievably massive.
Yeah, and so that's the thing, like $89 for the game, a game that massive, plus getting the book and the posters and I think even a CD. I'm not entirely sure what comes in the bundle. I think that's a good deal.
I think you're right, the soundtrack I think was included too. So, yeah, it's a very good deal. And for what looks like an absolutely incredible game.
I think that'll wrap up our Nintendosage segment. We're going to take a break and be right back with our main segment, a discussion of PAX Prime 2015. Welcome back to NExpress, PopOptic.com's Nintendo podcast. It's tricky to say that. I'm so used to saying SoundOnSite.org, but SoundOnSite.org is gone and PopOptic is here to stay.
Well, it's a good thing we haven't made that mistake yet.
I know. It's been a close call, but we've got it. With us still is Aaron Santos and Patrick Murphy.
Hello.
Hey.
But we also are bringing in my good friend Ryan Kapiowski, my co-host for This Podcast Came From the Moon.
Hello, everyone.
So, Ryan, it is a sacred tradition here at NExpress that every time we have a guest on the show for the first time, we ask them five questions in rapid succession, and you answer off the top of your head. Are you ready?
I am.
Awesome. Question number one, what is your favorite Nintendo console of all time?
My favorite Nintendo console is probably going to be the N64. There's a bunch of great classics on it, and I remember it's really what got me into gaming.
That's actually the right answer, so good job. Question number two, broader, what is your favorite console of all time, period?
Oh, geez. It's going to have to be the 360. I put in hundreds and hundreds of hours onto that console. I think I went through three of them.
Yeah.
Just burning them out. I had just a ton of games. My library for the 360 is huge, and I had a lot of fun playing it.
Awesome. Question number three. You can only play one game for the rest of your life. What is that game?
Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers for the NES. Or any. Yes.
No way.
Absolutely.
Wow, that was like Fat no
Cat? Oh, great.
Wow. Okay, let's keep going. Question number four. You can either destroy the headquarters of Sony or the headquarters of Microsoft. Which one do you destroy?
Definitely Sony. Microsoft brings in a lot of money for Washington.
That's
true. I don't want to blow up my home.
Way to go, capitalism.
Yep. All right, and for our final question, if you could be any Nintendo character at all, who would you be?
Is this really a question? I'd be Link, of course. So I don't have to talk to people. I don't get to talk to the girl every time. It's great.
That's the best part of the answer, is just that you say I wouldn't have to talk to people. Just like walk up and stare awkwardly with sword in hand.
What questions are
there? All right. So why don't we go ahead and move into our review of PAX Prime, which Ryan and I had the pleasure of attending this year. So we had a lot to look at. We're going to focus on the Nintendo aspect of the show, but just in Nintendo alone, there was a ton there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, they're really close.
For Sony and Microsoft, there's primarily just one big spot on the expo hall. But for Nintendo, that's never enough. Nintendo always has one big segment of the main expo hall, and then they split off to the side. There's a side entrance next to the escalators. They cover up two floors with different kiosks of a particular game. So that was there. And then this year, they also had an entire room dedicated to indie games alone at a neighboring hotel.
Wow.
So yeah.
What were they really pushing there? What was the big thing that they were pushing? Was there a game that stood out?
Yeah, the biggest thing that I noticed, there's a giant banner that just said Super Mario Maker that you could see like right behind Sony and Microsoft. It was right there. You couldn't miss it. Mm-hmm. So that was probably their biggest push this year.
And did you guys play some of Super Mario Maker?
Yeah, we did. The final day of the show that we went, which was Sunday, I went in there first thing, and everyone went to line up at all the really big shows, but everyone had already played Mario Maker, I guess, because I got there like before anyone else and just went rampant over in the Super Mario Maker section, and I could just like play as many levels as I wanted. It was wonderful. It's super fun. The best part was I was primarily just playing. There was someone next to me that was creating a level, and I stopped and watched him for a little bit, but just playing. The best part about it is that it's so unlike any Nintendo-made level anytime you play, because you just don't know what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. Like, there's one point where I hit a regular old question block, and a giant turtle came out. Like, not a Koopa, but, like, those other ones that you have that, like, you can't see their face. They're just, like, little legs and a shell.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, one of those guys just popped out of there, and it was giant, and if you hit it, it would, like, bounce into a whole bunch of giant bricks and led to a secret area that you couldn't otherwise get to, and it was just really fun. Like, I had no idea that was going to happen. There was another block that just kept spitting out, like, booze, a whole circle of them, and so, like, the next question block you walk up to, it was kind of like, do I even want to hit this one? Because it's probably just more booze. Granted, I still did it, and it was more booze, so serves me right.
Now, here's my thing. Do you think, okay, the shock value of playing something like that will wear off? Do you think there'll come a point where you're just not as excited by these strange things that are happening?
I don't think so. I mean, like, there's a lot of ways to be creative with that game, and I don't see it growing thin anytime in a year or so.
Okay. I'm like, I wrote obviously a dissenting piece on the site about Mario Maker, how I'm not really into it. But, so I'm just wondering from your guys' point of view.
I think the other thing is that once we're beyond all the shock value and all the novelty of these strange ideas, giving absolutely everything in the game wings, because you totally can, I think that we'll just have solid levels that are fun to play.
And that's
what's so great.
And not only that, but the shock value will always be there because you're always going to have user-created content. So you don't know what this person's thinking when he's designing this level. So it's another aspect to look at it.
Yeah. It's only a matter of time before someone recreates all of the original Metroid game or creates a giant Gundam out of blocks, because that's what always happens in these games.
Yeah, I'm totally expecting that. I think all their major franchises are going to be represented in Mario Maker by some creative people. No question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I at least hope so. So we also got to play Star Fox, which was a lot of fun.
That I'm super curious about. I really want to know, is this game going to be good?
I'll let Ryan take over for a little bit. I've been talking a lot. Ryan, what were your impressions of Star Fox?
I mean, we sat in line probably for about 2 hours to play Star Fox, and I just got to play the one level. And so it was kind of disappointing. It wasn't right the exact payoff I wanted out of a demo. That said, it was very similar to Star Fox 64, and it hit all the right notes. I'm really interested to see what the full game's like, because there was some secret paths that they had locked off during the demo. And mm-hmm. so I want to see all of that fun stuff.
Yeah. Did you think the aiming went okay with the Wii U gamepad? Did that feel natural, intuitive?
Not at all. It took me most of the demo to figure that out. And so I don't really like the gyro controls for Splatoon either. So it was kind of interesting being forced into that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because I wonder how long it'll take.
You don't necessarily have to even use it, though, was really interesting. For the most part, like the first level, you can kind of go without until one specific segment they make you use it.
Hmm. Okay.
So you can kind of get along without it. It makes getting some of your enemies a lot easier if you really quickly switch to it. And that's something that I was figuring out, I think, quicker than some players. But I also got more time with the game in the end because I beat the first level really fast. And so the guy was like, oh, go ahead and play the next one, which was very tablet-centric. I had to use the second screen for a lot of that level. I couldn't lock onto the boss without it. So
how did the second screen play?
It's like really interesting when you have to keep looking up and down, and you have to like steer your ship after an enemy pilot and then look down to lock up on him. Okay. I felt like I couldn't shoot him as easily, so the fight lasted longer. So there's a level of challenge that adds, and it made the fight probably more interesting because I had to be fully aware of both where my ship was in space and where I was aiming on the other screen. It's interesting.
So it didn't feel frustrating at all? It felt challenging, not frustrating, is what you're saying.
Yeah, no, not. I wouldn't say frustrating, just a little bit. It was foreign.
Okay.
Right. Okay, which is okay. I'm okay with that. I think sometimes the gamepad's gyroscope has brought me into a game, and sometimes it takes me out of a game. It just all depends.
Well, like we said, like the Splatoon took me. There's no way I'm going to play that game with the gyroscope.
See, I only play it that way, and
really?
I always do great. It feels so natural to me. As soon as I tried the demo, it just felt perfect to me, and I never went back to the right stick.
Really?
And I've always played that way, and yeah, I've always been successful that way.
Hmm. I couldn't do it. I lasted maybe 5 minutes before I needed to change it.
I lasted I lasted 2 minutes as soon as the game started, and I noticed how just fiddling around with the controls. I'm like, no, I can't do this.
The challenge with Star Fox is you're gonna have to use that thing, the gamepad, at some point. Obviously, lots of during that game. So hopefully they can make that work for everyone.
Oh, they're gonna have to.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting mix. I don't know if it felt different enough from the N64 one, but that second screen is definitely going to push us out of our comfort zone. So it's a really interesting combination of really familiar and very foreign at the same time.
Now, how did you guys think it looked? Because, it seems like a lot of people are criticizing the visuals, saying that they're kind of stuck in last generation even.
It looks better than it did at E3, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with that.
But some of it looked like they were going for a very classic Star Fox look. So some of the rings that you're going through are very boxy, I guess.
And that's
polygon. Okay.
Yeah, they kind of go for some of the polygons are all still there, and that's very much a part of the game.
Okay, that's all right as long as they're interesting.
Yeah,
they can make the aesthetically things. Mm-hmm. And I know Platinum's doing this game. Was there anything crazy involved? Were there crazy moments?
Not really, at least not in the demo that we got. Outside of the first boss fight is like a giant flying saucer, which sounds very Platinum-esque. And then as soon as you shoot down some of its satellites, you can drop inside of it, which was kind of cool. It was just different. Because there's like the chicken walker. There's no way around it. It's a chicken walker. You can land and keep walking around on 2 feet, and so that was a cool aspect of the game where it felt very much the same, but it was kind of a different game at that point.
Okay,
so it's good that
it was completely optional. You could actually just fly around and shoot it, but you would get a different ending. Okay. And so that was really interesting.
So that's different. That's replay value at the very least.
Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting approach then. So there's sort of like a branching. Do we know? Is there a branching storyline?
Yeah. There were different points. They were closed off for the demo, but there was one point where you think you're going to head straight, and then all of a sudden, I think it was Falco was like, let's head to the right, Fox. And I was like, no, like, I'm flying solo. See you guys later. And it wouldn't let me, so.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
I think so that would annoy me the most is having to do what Falco told me to do.
I know, that guy. It's better than listening to, like, Slippy, though, right?
Yeah.
He wouldn't presume to tell you what to do.
So, that, we'll have to kind of wait and see how that is. It gave me the impression that it's going to feel very much like Star Fox, but it'll take some getting used to.
Mm-hmm.
We did get to see a lot more other than that, including we got to try Triforce Heroes, which was a blast.
Another game I'm really curious about.
Yeah. So, at first, we were watching people play, and everyone apparently was doing it on the easiest level, where the basic dilemma is how high you have to stack to shoot arrows at enemies and the boss.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically all the puzzle there was to that level. So yeah, we were just kind of watching it, and we were like, it's sparse, it looked boring.
But didn't we say the same thing, too, when we first saw it at E3, though?
And that I think the same level they were probably showing up.
I mean, I remember we had the same sort of criticism just by watching it.
That's been my impression of that. There's just not a whole lot going on there.
But let me tell you guys, the game is actually a lot more challenging and a lot more fun than that.
Okay.
Yeah, so, we picked a new level. It was the Fortress. And that one was, I want to say, not the hardest, but the second hardest you could pick.
Yeah.
And so it required a lot more teamwork and had different items rather than just the arrows.
And so there were actually points where we were huddled around a puzzle and we were like, okay, guys, how do we solve this one? What do we do? Okay, Ryan, you pick me up and then I'll pick up this guy. And it was all sorts of nonsense like that the entire way through, where we were using two different gust jars to push bombs around and one of us was throwing bombs. And we were also continually boosting each other over ledges, and then one of us would have to kind of go do a solo thing until another one could join them. It was really, really interesting, and it was a really, really good challenge.
Hmm.
Now, do you think that that you guys could have played these stages if you were doing this online and couldn't talk to the person next to you?
I think we could have. It would have been more challenging, but there actually are quite a handful of emotes that Link can use. Not a ton, but I think just enough that we could probably get by. I know there's one that was like throw, and then there was one that's tower time, and one that says something like just Link saying no.
Okay, people are going to spam that, obviously.
Exactly. Yeah. Like Ryan did it right when we stepped on this Triforce to teleport. He was like, no, and we all teleported right then, and it was really funny. But it could have been used to be like, you know, two guys are trying to solve a puzzle and the third walks up and it's just like, no, like that's not how we're doing this.
But of course you could say no to them, but you offer no solution at that point because you can't talk.
Unless you kind of show up and start doing. And it was really interesting. The boss battle was unlike anything I've ever experienced in Zelda, where you can't really get close to. It was two different, like, guards on the far wall, then there's a giant chasm between you and you're on a central platform and you have to gust their bombs back at them until a final third enemy comes out. He throws giant bombs, which you have to avoid, while some little, I don't even remember what the enemy's called, the little shell octopusy guys come out. You have to kill some of those, and then at least two of the players will have to throw a bomb and then gust it over at the boss simultaneously. And it's just kind of like chaotic and tough to coordinate, but it was really, really fun to try.
Okay.
Hmm.
Yeah. Ryan, what were your thoughts about that? I thought it was a really, really well-designed boss.
Yeah, it was really hard to figure out at first. We thought we could blow over the big bomb as well using both of the gust jars, and that didn't work. And then in the end, I think we ran out of time because it was just a really hard fight.
Yeah, we had the boss at one hit and we ran out of time. No one knew there was a time limit even, but because we were doing the harder level, it took longer.
Okay.
Yeah, but it was really, really fun, and it was just very different. I hadn't seen a Zelda fight like that.
You know, there's elements of that seem interesting to me. I'm just wondering if it can hold up for an entire game.
I think it will. I mean, we only got to see or at least choose from four different levels that were ranked in difficulty. Mm-hmm. And we also got to choose from six different costumes. And that's already, like, for a demo, that seems like a lot of content. So it seems like they've got a lot there already. And that this was only what they were showing mm-hmm. for a weekend. So I can't imagine that the main game is going to be small by any means. I'm sure it's going to be a lot bigger than Four Swords. And it seems grander in scope and concept than Four Swords, at the very least.
That's good, because Four Swords never really stuck with me. I didn't really attach myself to that game too much.
Yeah, Four Swords was very competitive, and this seems very, very cooperative. And if you can't work together, you can't do it. So we actually saw a couple people fail the first level just because they couldn't coordinate well enough. Which is kind of sad, but it also tells you that it's not just going to be one player carrying the team. It's got to be all.
Okay.
Which is good.
Yeah, which is really good.
Yeah.
So I'm really looking forward to that. That just solidified in my mind this is going to be a really cool, unique Zelda title.
Okay. They didn't happen to have... Did they happen to have Metroid there?
No, Metroid was not there.
Okay.
I don't think they wanted a riot.
Oh man, I almost think the more they show of that game, it's gonna the better it'll be for that game. They just need to get it out in the open.
Yeah, but I based on the minute long trailer that we've seen, it seems like it's gonna be a while before we can play it.
Yeah, that's too bad.
But I'm surprised. Like, not even like the sort of like soccer ish thing that they had going on, especially at the World Championship.
That would have been cool. I would have loved to try it out, but no, wasn't there. So I have saved maybe the best for last. I don't know. I really liked Triforce Heroes. Super Mario Maker looks brilliant. But there was a whole room in a hotel dedicated to just indie games. And we got to play some of the best coming out in a couple months. Mm-hmm. And that was a ton of fun. Ryan, what stuck out to you from the Sheraton?
I mean, the best by far, I think, was SteamWorld Heist.
Really? That was your favorite?
Absolutely.
Okay, tell us about it.
Turn-based shooter, where you're going through this ship, killing off enemies to collect water, I believe. And it was a short little demo, but I had a blast just gathering party members and taking out some pirates.
Interestingly enough, it is nothing like SteamWorld Dig at all.
I keep hearing the name SteamWorld, and I automatically assume that it's something like that. But I think I have seen a little bit on Heist, and I do. It does sound more like what it's vaguely familiar what Ryan's describing.
Yeah, it's super weird. Like, it wasn't what I expected, where you're kind of like pointing and clicking. Your character will walk over there, and you can hide behind things, or you can pop up and start firing your gun. It was really, really cool, and you were controlling two characters at a time. It was like an interesting puzzle.
And explain how does
turn-based
this...
adventure.
Yeah, explain how does this turn-based work then?
So essentially how it works is, like, you and your secondary character were picking their movements and getting from, like, cover to cover.
Okay.
Trying to, like, if you're out in the open, you'll start getting shot. Yeah. So we were, like, kind of, like, going spot to spot, and you're pointing and clicking and moving. And then once you're within range, you can choose to then start firing. And if you, like, do it well enough, if you time it well, you can... usually kill an enemy in one turn if both characters manage to shoot them right away. And so it's kind of like a turn-based, I don't know, like anything you would expect, but...
Well, sort of like...
There's no, like, all of a sudden, like, battle mode. Mm-hmm. It's all just the same level. It was unique in that aspect.
Okay. Yeah, because I'm, like, looking at the screenshots, and I'm, like, trying to figure out, like, how does this turn-based work?
Yeah, but it was interesting. I can't think of any comparisons. Ryan, can you?
Not off the top of my head, no.
That was the interesting thing about that one. I'm surprised that you said that was your favorite, Ryan, because I thought there was a lot there. I am very happy to say that I actually got to try Plague Knight, which was cool.
Oh, the DLC, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I didn't see that coming at all. They had it advertised everywhere. But when you first walked up to the Shovel Knight kiosk, it looked like it was just Shovel Knight. And then someone like finished their turn and I walked up and I looked at it and it was like, choose your character. And I like swapped over and from Shovel Knight to Plague Knight. I was like, oh, done. I'm going to try Plague Knight.
Mm-mm.
And it immediately set up an interesting dilemma where there was a cliff that I just plain couldn't get over until Ryan was just like, oh, you just hold down the attack button. And I was like, what? And when you hold down your attack, Plague Knight can like propel himself with an explosion. And so already he plays totally different than Shovel Knight. Shovel Knight was dependent on bouncing off enemies.
Yeah.
Plague Knight can kind of launch himself, and then while in air, he can go even further if you start shooting or throwing your explosives down below. And so it was just a really, really interesting, very different feel.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I really liked it. I was having a ton of fun with it. I noticed that I completely crushed Black Knight so much faster than I did in Shovel Knight. Like, he was no problem with Plague Knight.
I think it helps too that he has like projectiles. I think the projectile bombs must do something.
Yeah, the fact that I was like leaping through the air above him and then throwing bombs at him made it really, really interesting. And the bombs bounce and last a little while, so there's plenty of maybe hit, but you can't really get up close it as safely like Shovel Knight can.
Was there anything that made it more difficult with Plague Knight?
Not in this demo at the very least, but I couldn't tell if I was like, I didn't see if I was wasting magic or anything because it seemed like I had unlimited bombs. So the actual platforming was easier. I can imagine that it'll get more difficult at later levels when there are points where you just need to bounce with your shovel. Like I'm wondering how I'll even be able to handle those. If not, at one point I actually launched really, really far because I kept throwing bombs and that helped Plague Knight travel further. But that was me adding a challenge, taking a quicker route and avoiding one entire platform. So I'm sure later on I'll make you do that. We also got to play Runbow, which just came out, but we got to play the 8-player multiplayer mode, one of them, where you are literally just racing to a trophy, and like Runbow, platforms keep disappearing as the background color changes.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know about you, Ryan, I thought this was like a brilliant party game.
Oh yeah, this was a lot of fun. I lost, but...
Yeah, I won. You were close. You were, like, right behind me.
Yeah, I think I came in second, but... It was actually really hard to do. You had to keep an eye on all the other players, and you had a bunch of different attacks for if people were above you or below you, and so you had to time it out. It was a lot of skill was involved with just running from side to side.
That game seems totally chaotic. Like it seems hard for even to get to the end, period. For anybody to get to the end, it might be difficult.
Mm-hmm.
The guy that was playing as Shovel Knight turned us all into Shovel Knights.
Okay.
And so it was just impossible to tell who you even were. And so all of a sudden everyone's like trying to figure out like, okay, I'm jumping now. Is that one me? And it was just madness.
But I noticed that a lot of the gameplay does remind me of like this other game on PC called Speedrunners. It's almost got the same style.
Yeah, it's got a similar feel.
Mm-hmm.
And it like also kind of reminded me of Super Smash Bros. Because all the characters can do two jumps and then they can literally do an up B.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so, okay.
Yeah, that reminded me of Smash Bros. But taking it in such a different direction that I loved it.
You could have a lot of fun with people couch playing that game, no question.
Oh, definitely. I think this is one of those games like designed for people to play on the couch together.
Yeah. It also seems designed to like smash controllers too, because I can see there being a lot of competition in this game and people just screaming at, you know, anything that goes wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I was gonna say, Ryan, did you happen to play Typo Man?
I did. I didn't finish it.
It was one demo that outsmarted me.
Oh, really? You needed your wordsmith friend to come help.
I really did. Where was that English major when I needed him?
Yeah, so there's this really cool game, Typo Man, coming out, where everything is very word-oriented. So you should definitely, it's hard to describe, you should definitely go look up a video of it. But it's got a really, really dark, atmospheric, like, tense environment. And all of the puzzles in the game are platforming combined with little word puzzles. So you get to add letters to certain words to solve puzzles, or you can literally just grab words out of the environment and add them to another word that's sitting there. For example, there's one point where there was a giant rain cloud, and it says rain inside of it. And it's pouring down, and there's a big body of water that you can't get across. But in front of it, if you like are swinging, there's the letters ADD. So it says like add rain, and you're like trying to figure it out. And what you have to do is swing the final D over to rain, and it makes the word drain, and then all of a sudden all the water will drain out and you can run across before the rain comes back.
That's really interesting.
Yeah. Okay. So it's like little, this was like the simplest level of the game, I'm sure, so it'll get a lot harder. But
I'm looking at pictures.
There was another. Yeah.
I was gonna say, like, it looks like in Limbo meets what's that? Scribblenauts.
Yeah,
yeah, something like that.
This sounds like something I will totally pick up. Like, this is right in my alley.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it reminded me of that movie Nine, which wasn't very good, but it had a very, very dark atmosphere to it, very similar to Limbo. But the wordplay in it was a lot of fun. Just the fact that like your character is named Hero and he's made up of the letters from the word hero and little stuff like that. And
I thought you were gonna say you're made of a sandwich or something.
No. And then there, like, one of the enemies that gets thrown at you is formed up of the word hate and stuff like that. It's just really, really creative and really cool. Plus, I'm hoping that it gets more challenging the further you go, and I can't wait for that kind of challenge. So that was one that I really was interested in that I'm definitely going to pick up down the road we should review. Yeah,
that sounds great. Did you guys get to play Hive Jump at all?
Yeah, our friend got to play it then. We didn't. We were too busy playing everything else. But he came back with really good reviews and said it's a really, really fun party game also.
That's supposed to be like a Metroid-style game, isn't it?
That's what it looked like, and it looked like there was up to four players at a time. It looked very Metroid-esque. But, yeah, people seemed generally pleased. It had a bigger line, and that's why I went to some of the other stuff first. What else
there?
Was
also supposed to be a racing game, Fast Racing Neo. I heard that was pretty
cool. Yeah, that was there. I only watched that one for a little bit because it kind of reminded me of what you would expect if Nintendo did another, like, I don't know.
F-Zero.
I don't want to say quite F-Zero, but it had that feel where, like, kind of like the gravity in Mario Kart 8. Some of the tracks were very, like, bendy and windy, and it was a very colorful game, and it looked like it could be a lot of fun, but I didn't actually try it, so I can't speak to it too much. Typo Man was right next to it, and I played Typo Man, and then went to Runbo immediately after, which was on the other side of it, because Runbo was just too fun not to play, even though it's coming out right now. And then Oddworld was there, so I can tell you that it's officially coming to the Wii U. We could have played it. So I think outside of Mario Maker and Triforce Heroes, a whole bunch of fun indies, just a full room of indies, which was a ton of fun to hop in there and just play nonstop. There was also a small Splatoon section where, get this, on Saturday, in honor of Splatfest, if you played, which was like a two-hour line, so we didn't, if you played Splatoon, you actually got a Transformers t-shirt, either a Decepticon shirt or an Autobot shirt with like splats all over it, and then like the Splatoon squid on the back.
That was like, I would have stayed in line for that one.
Yeah, I would have too, but Ryan wasn't into it, so we went to something else.
Dude, that was my biggest problem with Nintendo at PAX was they were showing off a bunch of games that were coming out within, you know, the next week or month. And then you had some games like Splatoon that were already out and had been out for a while, and I just didn't understand why they're wasting showroom floor on these games.
You know, one of the things is they're probably, Splatoon is one of their biggest hits in a long time, like a new IP hit, and maybe they're just trying to keep that train rolling.
Yeah.
That was my guess. And especially with, like, the Splatfest going on and the Transformers tie-in, like, I'm sure everyone's going to get really excited about that.
Definitely. I mean, what better way to attract possible newcomers than to have them play, like, you know, Splatoon, but with, you know, Transformers theme going on.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it gets the press, you know. They can at least have stories. There are stories that are going to be published saying how they had this contest, or, you know, how they had Splatoon there and you could get a t-shirt, and it just keeps Splatoon in the public eye, I guess.
Of course, yeah, yeah.
Outside of that, though, the only thing that I can remember them showing off, outside of a couple of game trailers for Yoshi and a couple of others, which wasn't playable, huge bummer, they should have had Yoshi.
Oh.
They did have a huge, like, almost a little theater dedicated to just this giant video of Xenoblade Chronicles X. I stopped and watched it for a couple of minutes, and I didn't spend too much time there because I was like, I'd rather just play it at some point. But man, does it look pretty.
Oh yeah.
Like, yes, that was the one thing that I walked away with was, no, I guess two things that I walked away with is, one, it looks gorgeous. It's probably the best looking game on Wii U. I mean, Mario Kart 8 looks really good, so it's tough saying that. But I also had no idea what was happening. That was the other thing I took away from it.
You mean plot-wise or gameplay-wise? Because one of those scares me, the other one doesn't.
Like, gameplay-wise, it looked like what you would expect. Like, people were running up and slashing enemies, and we got to see some more robot action. But
it's okay, buddy. We all know JRPGs scare you a little.
Yeah, in terms of, like, what they were doing, like, their objective, I have no idea. Like, dinosaurs meets robots. I don't even know. Tats. Yeah.
Did you play Xenoblade Chronicles? I'm assuming you didn't, then.
I didn't. Ryan did. Or at least part of the way through.
Okay. Because it looks just like... The combat looks exactly the same as that game, right, Ryan?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, it looks great. I can't wait for another JRPG, especially one on the Nintendo, because I love that genre. So.
Yeah, do a thing.
Really, that's my jam.
I think that was mostly our experience from PAX. Nintendo had a great showing overall. A couple of weird choices, like not including Yoshi and bringing Splatoon, but in the end, we were so satisfied with the indies. We are generally positive about Star Fox, and we really loved Triforce Heroes, especially being two friends, like, who can play a Zelda game together. That's such a great idea. I'm so glad that it's back. And it was a satisfying challenge. So I think that was one of the biggest highlights of the entire PAX conference for me.
Okay. You know what we also saw was the Shovel Knight amiibo.
Oh yeah, we got to see it. That's the thing I was holding back on earlier. We got to see it. We went to the Shovel Knight stand, which was on the top floor. David D'Angelo, who we interviewed on an earlier episode, was not there. He was the only maker of the game that wasn't present. He had to be at something else, so that was kind of sad that I couldn't say hi, but I said hi to the other two, and I tried to buy the amiibo from them.
only at retail price, though, right?
I was kind of joking, and they knew I was kind of joking, so I got a couple of prices around $150,000. But, you know, I thought about it.
As they stalled while they called security?
Yeah. No, we had a good talk, and they thought it was funny that the only guy who wasn't there was David, who was the one that we interviewed earlier, and so I was like, oh, it would have been so fun to meet him.
Yeah.
And how did it look? Does it look like it's going to fit in with the other amiibo?
Yeah, it looked pretty big. The figure itself looked pretty thick and hefty. Shovel Knight always struck me as like a small character, especially since a lot of the other characters are bigger than him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But he seemed like a pretty big figure.
Yeah, which is surprising. Huh. Just I like when I saw the announcement and pictures, even when people hold it in their palm, you were able to make that size difference. I'm like, that looks pretty big for an amiibo.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely on the larger side. But we also got to see the ones that are coming out real soon, 8-bit Mario. We got to see Mewtwo and a whole bunch of the other ones that are coming. And like 8-bit Mario is also really big. And I'd say Shovel Knight's a little smaller than 8-bit, but they were both like a larger size amiibo. It's interesting.
Yeah. 8-bit Mario, super cool.
Yeah, it was really cool. I was mostly just like getting ready to steal the Mewtwo, though.
Just grab it and run.
How thick is this glass? Yeah.
So it's like, it would be like in the Simpsons episode. Remember, like when Homer sees the jelly Mona Lisa. Would that be a good depiction of what you were thinking?
Yeah, I'd say that.
I hope it was exactly like that.
Run!
I just like that I'm Homer Simpson in this scenario. All right, so I'm going to say that Triforce Heroes was the highlight of my PAX experience. Maybe not the best game I played because Halo 5 was there and it was brilliant, but it was way up there and I had a ton of fun. What about you, Ryan?
Yeah, for Nintendo, I'd say that was probably the best game. I had a ton of fun with Gang Beasts, but...
Yeah, that was a fun game. If you want to see a really, really fun party game, go check out Gang Beasts. And I guess support them and try to get that to come to Wii U and other platforms, because right now it's only on PlayStation 4 and Steam. So hopefully that would come to Wii U and give us another brilliant indie game. But with Runbo, with Typo Man, with Plague Knight coming out, Steam World Dig, there were so many games that are coming out that were just a ton of fun. And I think in terms of indies and some big hits, Nintendo nailed PAX this year.
That's true. I mean, it's a good people are complaining about third party support. Well, there's your third party support.
Yeah, seriously, it's all in the indie form, and with Nintendo letting Yacht Club make an amiibo and this strong level of support, I think that it's a really, really good relationship Nintendo has with these small parties.
It's true, yeah.
And that could really, you know, tide us over in between major Nintendo releases. They really needed that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right, so that'll do it for our PAX review. We are going to take a break and bring Ricky right back. Keep an eye peeled on popoptic.com for my soon-to-come review of PAX and my entire experience. We will talk to you in just a second.
The world of special place.
Cherish life and never waste.
Everyone loves a sunshiny day.
We're gonna keep it that way.
Because clean is better than dirty. And dirty's neater than clean.
Let's all lend a helping hand. Mario can't do it alone. He'll spray his water to fly around and clean the sludge that's on the ground.
Because clean is better than dirty. And dirty's neater than clean.
Super Mario Sunshine, only for Nintendo GameCube. Rated E for everyone.
Welcome back to N-Express, PopOptic.com's Nintendo podcast. With us again is Ricky D, Aaron Santos, Patrick Murphy, and Ryan Kapiowski is sticking around to talk about Mario Sunshine, a continuation of our Super Mario-themed year. You guys, let's go ahead and get into one of the weirdest Mario titles that we have ever gotten.
You think it's one of the weirdest? Come on.
Weirder than Mario Galaxy?
Weirder than Galaxy was weird Mario? Too.
But Galaxy,
well,
essentially
mainline
like,
Mario's maybe. Okay, like me.
Yeah.
There's been plenty of weird other Mario's.
Yeah, I don't know, guys. I haven't played this game since back in the day because I don't know if I even own it anymore because my nephews took my GameCube, but I wish I could. Like, I wish they would release this on the Wii U Virtual Store, because I kind of want to play it again to get, you know, to kind of confirm if it's really as disappointing as I remember it to be. Because I don't think it's a terrible game, but my problems with Sunshine are similar to my problems with 64. My number one issue with Sunshine was the camera. And the camera system in Sunshine is actually an improvement from the camera system in 64. But it was still somewhat frustrating at times, okay? But the biggest problem with this game is really just the environment, or the fact that it all takes place on an island. Mm-hmm. And although there's some really cool secret levels, the main levels, which I think there's only 7, are just way too similar.
Yeah. It's like beach environment the entire time. It gets really
tedious. That's the one thing I like about it. I love the setting of Super Mario Sunshine. I like the cohesive world aspect, too, that most Mario games don't have. They're mostly just isolated stages that have nothing to do with each other. But this kind of feels like he's in a world, and there's a community involved here. It's like a Mario game with the most story.
But, okay, yeah, okay. It's the Mario game with the most story because, correct me if I'm wrong, but I remember that opening prologue being like 30 minutes long.
Yeah.
It takes forever.
And you could not skip it, okay?
Nope, you can't.
And I don't know if they would release this again on the Wii U. Like, maybe you would be able to skip the opening narration, that whole 30-minute long cutscene, but that was kind of annoying.
This is the most that we've heard people talk.
It's the most we've heard people talk, but at the same time, the sound effects are kind of annoying. but it's funny because you say cohesive, and I guess, what I'm saying is that each and every single one of these stages has the same kind of feel, vibe, colors, and whatnot. But, I mean, look at a game like Super Mario World. I mean, there's a world. Like, you even have an overhead map, and it shows how everything connects. Like, you move from the forest to the mountains to the jungle and so on and so forth. This is just an island.
Oh, I agree with you about Super Mario World for sure. I think as far as the 3D Marios go, I should have said, because even Super Mario 3 and all those all blend together really well. But as far as the 3D Marios go, those became these sort of isolated stages, but except for Sunshine. So now, don't get me wrong, I am not here to like tout the greatness of Super Mario Sunshine. I did recently replay it. Mm-hmm. And oh my God, I don't think I've cursed that much in a long time. But
why? Because of the camera, or
okay, the camera is atrocious.
Thank you.
And it's the worst. I died so many times because of that stupid camera. It's inverted for one thing, both ways, even left and right.
Oh my God!
And there's no way to change that in the options. Believe me, I looked. I was hating every minute of that.
But you know what, Patrick? Have you played 64 recently?
I have not, and I know...
Because this is an improvement over the camera system in 64, and I think 64 is one of the greatest games ever made, but that camera system is also, like, not... I mean, they didn't have the technology at the time, but the thing about Mario 64 is it's such an amazing game that despite the fact that the camera frustrates you so much, you can't help but fall in love with the game. Whereas here, we get a mediocre Super Mario platformer that also has a problematic camera.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's the thing. I think... Like what you said about the stages, I like the actual setting of the stages, but there's nothing interesting in the stages themselves. There's nothing really fun to do within the stages themselves. And I'm a supporter of the flood, the little water pack. Mm-hmm. I thought it brought something interesting. And despite what people think, you're actually not cleaning up most of the time. That's really not what happens. You do that in like one or two stages. You spray things a little bit, but
dude, it's like Splatoon, except instead of shooting, shoot the ball.
No, it totally isn't. You're running and jumping just like every Mario game. It's just that the running and jumping part is not fun at all because Mario slips off the edge of every single platform. Like he doesn't have the precision that most Mario games have. And Rick, you could stop me if I'm wrong. Maybe Super Mario 64 didn't have that either. Maybe it was a little slippery. But I don't remember Super Mario 64 being slippery.
Oh, no, not at all. Not at all.
Okay. Oh. Yeah, well, this one, you not only have to hit your spot, you have to hit your spot a little bit in front of where you want to land. Because
dude, we reviewed 64 3 weeks ago, and I'm still playing 64 because I'm trying to 100% complete it.
Oh, okay. Well,
so I got all 70 stars, beat Bowser, and I didn't save it purposely so I could go back and 100% complete it because that game's amazing.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I love that game back in the day, and I know I beat it multiple times.
Okay, so here's the thing. But the problem is, this is why I want to go back and play this game again, but once again, it's not available, because this game came out in a GameCube, but as we all know, it wasn't released with the GameCube, which is a bold move on the part of Nintendo, because they opted to go with Luigi's Mansion instead, so Luigi got the spotlight, which is cool, because I love Luigi.
Yeah,
and that game's the best.
Good game.
That game's the best. But we had to wait 6 years to get a new Super Mario platformer, and it just so happened to be a follow-up to 64, which a lot of people consider one of the greatest games ever made. So obviously people were going to be disappointed because your expectations back then were so high, which is why I want to go back and replay it. But, you know, just like I'm writing an article about this game, and because I can't play it anymore, I've been watching some Let's Play videos, and I'm like, oh, my God, now I remember my frustration with this game.
So I was all prepared to come into this podcast singing, you know, just absolutely saying I loved Mario Sunshine back in the day. Didn't think it was better than 64, but I had a really good time with it. I did beat it back in the day. The only major problem, the thing that kept me from 100%ing it was the, you know, the stages where they take away your water pack and force you to do traditional Mario platforming only with horrible 3D camp. So I couldn't 100% the game because of that, and I eventually gave up. But I did like the game a lot, and I was all prepared to come in and say that until just playing it the last 2 days and wanting to scream obscenities left and right because of just how poorly this game has aged, in my opinion.
So does anybody here actually think that this is one of the best games in the series, like the core series?
No.
No.
Well, you never know. Brian, maybe? No?
I haven't played a game after Sunshine, so...
You mean
Galaxy 2?
Hey, you played Mario 3D World with me a couple of times, so you can't entirely say that.
That being said, I remember liking Sunshine, but it's been, you know, over 10 years, so...
Yeah.
This, let me just... I'm still bitter, I think. There were two games that Ryan made me play on the GameCube. One of them was Luigi's Mansion, and that was a great recommendation by Ryan. Like, Ryan, high five, that game's awesome, you are absolutely right. That is, like, the epitome of the GameCube. I think with that game... and Wind Waker. If you want to throw in Resident Evil 4 for good measure, I'll give you that.
Oh, definitely.
And
yeah.
Metroid Prime, boom, done. GameCube, already just like the best console. I love that console.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
But then you also made me try Mario Sunshine, and I remember playing like two levels and being like, no, this is the worst. I love the idea of Luigi gets a vacuum and Mario gets something new too. But just, like, the mechanic never worked for me. This was never thrilling. As soon as they put it in Smash Bros., I was kind of offended. I was like, what are you doing? Like,
oh,
don't bring this back up. But not bring this back up.
You know the difference between Luigi's Mansion and Luigi getting the vacuum cleaner and Mario getting the flood? Is in Sunshine, Mario is so overpowered. Like, a lot of what makes 64 so challenging is no longer challenging in Sunshine because you have this sort of jetpack. So when you're when you're jumping from one, say, floating block to the next floating block, you just use your jetpacks. You're going to float to the next block, and if you don't make it, you just float back to the previous block. That's why I like the secret levels in this game, because the secret, and I'm pretty sure it's the secret levels, those are the levels where it's like a bottomless pit.
Yeah.
So you lose your security, your comfort zone. And so when you get into those levels, it's like this big change, and it becomes really challenging.
Mm-hmm.
See, I hate those levels with a passion.
I think those are the most challenging, only in this game. I think it's the most challenging and interesting levels in this game, though.
Well, they're definitely the most challenging, I'll give you that. But the problem is the game is setting you up to use the jetpack, and I would have liked to have seen them construct challenges around that, because all of a sudden this thing that you're trained to use is stripped from you, and now you have to navigate these much more difficult stages than anything you've played so far with the jetpack, only do it without it. And so these are gateways too to getting shine sprites that you need in order to move on. So you're forced to beat these things, and you will die a lot.
Yeah.
But not in that Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze fun way, like the kind that didn't annoy me. It was the kind of dying where the controls, the camera, everything conspired against me.
Well, and you know what else is worse? And I sort of like, this was a nitpick for me with Mario 64, but here it's a huge complaint. Is the fact that none of these levels are very interesting, but you're forced to play them over and over again.
Yeah. Yes.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but if my memory serves me correct, you had to do it in a specific order, whereas in 64, you can choose what you want to do.
Mm.
That's correct, yep. You have to play a certain number before you unlock the next world. Mm-hmm. So I got through the fifth world, and was playing through five of those worlds, different stages in each. And yeah, there is a ton of repetition
The whole game is repetition.
Yeah,
it really is. And then you get kicked. If you die, you might get kicked out of the world if you lost life. They don't give you lives like they do in most Mario games, so you get kicked out of the world a lot of times. And then you have to go all the way back and go through the entire thing all over again just to play the stupid stage that you wanted to beat.
You know what's funny? I don't know if you guys remember, but when Luigi's Mansion came out, most people loved the game. But there was a few critics who were like, it's too short. And then Sunshine comes out, and there's only 7 levels. You know, not including the secret levels, but technically there's only 7 levels. But within the 7 levels, they don't really do much. There's so many shortcomings. Like, I remember there's one specific level where you walk around, and I swear to God, there's nothing surrounding you. There's nothing anywhere for like 10 minutes. Oh my God, do you remember having a hop on the boat? And then the boat is moving so bloody slow, and you have to wait until you get to the second boat, which moves so bloody slow until you get to the third boat. I was like, I'm not joking. It must have taken like 15 minutes to get to the third boat.
That's in the hub world, right? That's those boats. Yep. Yeah. Oh, those are awful. Just
it's like that whole hub world is the worst. It's so big, open, and sparse. There's nothing there except for like those stupid like creatures that look like the dumb singing thing from Jabba's Palace in the newer Return of the Jedi. Like,
yeah.
What are they? And I hate him.
Yeah, well, the problem with the town square is it's so big, so vast, and there's so little detail, like you said, as opposed to Mario 64, where it's basically just a castle, and it's not as wide or it's not as big, and so like you do walk around, and it's good to use as sort of like a tutorial, so you can sort of like get used to Mario's movesets and whatnot before you actually enter into one of these stages. Right. But here, it's just so big for no reason, because they don't actually make use of this space.
No, not at all.
It's pointless.
Yep.
It's
a, I mean, I liked... Yeah. And there's just a lot of running. Just back and forth to different places. Just travel is...
Basically. Okay, if you were to take the amount of time for the opening cutscene and then add on the time for side quests, like, for example, when you have to go from boat 1 to boat 2 to boat 3, which takes about 20 minutes because you just basically have Mario stand on a boat while it circles the island... You already have an hour of gameplay.
Oh yeah, you're not kidding about that intro, by the way. For anybody that thinks he's exaggerating, I did just play through that. He's right; it's like a half an hour. It's ridiculous. before you play the first stage, it's like a half an hour.
Well, and okay, so it's just funny because a lot of people say if this game has more story. I guess it just feels like it has.
Do we
more
really
dialogue.
Care? That's the problem.
Well, there's some weird stuff, like Bowser Jr. thinks that Peach is his mom.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just strange, right?
Or the fact that it's an imposter who's responsible for the graffiti, and he looks exactly like Mario, except he's like sort of like, Metal looks Mario. Like a Terminator Mario. Is what he looks like.
Yeah. I don't really know what was going on with the story, but there's definitely a lot more of it.
But I don't think any of us want to get that far.
There was some, you know, I mean, like, I know it sounds like we're real discrediting the game, but there were some interesting moments. I mean, like, especially, I always think back with, like, the amusement park level. Remember, like, the roller coaster?
Oh, yeah.
Those little points, I thought they were great, you know? Like, but...
Here's the thing, like, I'm with you, Aaron. I absolutely thought that was going to be the case for me. Like, nostalgically looking back on this game, I remember thinking, yeah, I really liked this game. There were some really cool parts. Well, I played that roller coaster stage, and the mechanics of aiming your stupid missiles at this enormous Bowser while you're getting hit with bullet bill after bullet bill. Oh my God. And then when you die, it kicks you out of the stage. You got to run through the hub world again, go back to a cannon, get fired back to this world, run through the park all the way, see another cutscene. Over and over and over again so that you can get to the roller coaster. Yeah. Oh, man. Just sapped any enjoyment I had out of it.
Well, thank God it still lives nicely in my nostalgia. In my memory.
You're one of the lucky ones. I wish it was that way for me, too.
Maybe that's why they haven't released it on the Wii U. I mean, I don't know. But I was thinking that, too. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I remember that, you know, like, when you had to do the red coin collection, I mean, you had to do it. Like, it wasn't even... It was like mandatory. Yeah. It wasn't even an option. I remember, okay, like, you know, even in Mario 64, sometimes I would go for the red coins, and sometimes I wouldn't because I would just want to collect my stars. Mm-hmm. And here, there's 120 shines I think that you need to collect, but you only need like what 40 to actually finish the game, if not less.
It was like 60 or something. I don't think it was quite that. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I was at 20 and I was not close to getting to the end. So I have to believe that it was, it's got to be around 60 somewhere. Mm-hmm. And I know I had 80 something when I finally gave up back in the day. I looked at my old save file. It was 82, I think I had.
I've never finished the game. I don't know. I played it. I thought it had moments that were fun, and I liked some of the visuals. And I guess I like the villain, like the clone Mario.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's cool.
Yeah, I just never really got into it to the point where I wanted to finish it, which is why, again, I want them to release the game. But if they were to release this game, say, like next year, I'm most likely not going to play it because we've already reviewed on the show, and God, I'm going to be too busy playing something else.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. I think there's a reason that this game hasn't been re-released.
Well, I think so, too. After replaying it, I just don't think it fits. It's not like Galaxy, which still fits like a glove. I mean, mm-hmm. Galaxy controls flawlessly.
Yeah.
But this one does...
Well, it's true. No, I mean, like everything about just the direction of its look and everything, the gameplay, it's just so weird. It was such a weird Mario game.
Yeah. I'll say this for Ryan's benefit. Videos, like long cutscenes, open worlds, and lots to do, that all belongs in Metal Gear Solid. Like,
yes,
that just came out today. Mm-hmm. Ryan will tell you he's already addicted, and I've like forced him into playing Destiny with him against his will. So
you're terrible, Tim. Like, do not take someone away from Metal Gear 5.
No, he's already like, he's texting me behind all your backs, and he's just like, but Metal Gear, like, do I have to talk about this game? Can I go play Metal Gear? Like, no, you sit through this, Ryan.
It's calling me.
Like, all that stuff belongs in Metal Gear, where there's a ton to do. This game just doesn't have enough to do. It's like a big open world. Like, the hub world is awful. The actual levels are like really boring and bland. Mm. And I get so tired of the beach aesthetic after a while that I'm like, give me a ghost house and a mountain and a forest, I don't know, or give me death.
Well, but there is the Boo level, and that's one of the levels I do like in the game.
Yeah, and that, like,
I actually had the most fun in that level, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, as soon as you get away from the beach, it's so refreshing that, like, mm-hmm. even Boo levels, which are often, like, not... I love Boos more than anything, but Boo levels are often a little bit less fun platforming-wise because it's just kind of, like, find the right door.
Yeah, it's mm-hmm. more puzzle-based.
Exactly. And so it's, like, a little less fun. It's not what I want out of a Mario game, but when the Boo level is the highlight of an entire game, I think that just shows you what kind of game it is.
Now I have a question. What's the difference between this beach and then, you know, being on space for Galaxy and Galaxy 2?
Okay.
Like, I figured that would have gotten a bit, you know, boring after a while.
But in Galaxy, you're going from planet to planet to world to world. You're going to different galaxies that play entirely differently. Like,
yeah.
Some levels
yeah, will the environments be a giant change sphere. Constantly.
Yeah.
Everything changes. The whole entire environment changes. Plus, you're in space, so aesthetically, it just looks cooler. But this is like, it's an island. Like, it's just beach property, and the whole entire game looks exactly the same. It just looks like you're stepping in from one room in a house to the next room. It doesn't really look like you're going far in the game. Galaxy is just mind blowing. We're going to talk about that next week. But yeah, plus we don't have the problem with the camera system in Galaxy. Galaxy is a far more challenging game. The characters are far more interesting. I think the story is far more interesting, even if we don't have like 20 minute cutscenes.
Mm-hmm. I agree. It's optional. You don't have to read the book of Rosalina's book if you don't want to.
I think we should probably wrap it up. But I think it's hilarious that this game has got us all in the Super Mario Bros. 30th anniversary celebration on N-Express has got us all turning against Mario.
Well, it's not turning against Mario. I mean, look, we've had great games come out afterwards. But the other problem with this game that I have to say before we close off the show is, man, Yoshi is useless in his game.
Yes, he is. He just spits juice in people's faces. That's all he does.
He actually makes the gameplay less enjoyable. Which is mind-blowing, because it's...
Yeah. He's supposed to be the best part.
Yeah, exactly. It's what people look forward to. Yeah.
So, Super Mario Sunshine.
It's a ray of sunshine.
It belongs in its case on your shelf in your library and in your memories. Yes. It does not necessarily belong in your current console or in your GameCube if you're still playing on a GameCube.
But you know what? Like, bless Patrick that he's tried it again.
Yeah,
I'm gonna go play some Rogue Squadron to wash the bad taste out of my mouth. I need something. Resident Evil 4 is staring me right in the face right now.
That'd be a good life choice.
All right.
That will do it for NXpress this week. We actually just launched a Facebook page for our podcast, which you should go check out. You should like. Please spread the word about our podcast. We would love for you guys to share us, to like us, and to just talk with us. Use the Facebook to contact us. Let us know what you want us to talk about, and let us know what you think of Super Mario Sunshine. Aaron Santos, thank you for being on the show as always. Where can we find you online?
You can find me on Twitter at TheCharmless6, and you can find me hosting our gaming podcast over at www.ftwgamingpodcast.com.
Awesome. Patrick Murphy, thank you so much for returning once more and for supporting Super Mario Sunshine more than any of us did, I think, this episode. Where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter at PS_porcupine, and of course you can always find me in the game sections on the new popoptic.com.
Awesome. Ryan Kapiowski, my co-host from this podcast, Came from the Moon, thank you so much for being with us. Where can we find you online?
Oh, thanks for having me. You can find me on Twitter at RPCappy, and like you said, I'm the Destiny podcast on the site.
Yeah, and Ryan is also going to be a writer in the game section and maybe some other sections coming up real soon. So look out for him there. Ricky D, where can we find you online?
I'm no longer on Twitter because I hate Twitter, so don't find me on Twitter. But you That's can right. find the official Twitter account for popoptic.com, which is popoptic. Like us on Facebook. And you can find me on the NXpress Facebook podcast page, which I just made. So the link will be with the post for this podcast over on our website. Once again, popoptic with a Q at the end, not a C, .com.
Optic.
And I am Tim Mason. You can find me at The Freemason, MAISON, on Twitter. You can also find me in the game section of popoptic.com with a Q, not a C. You can also find me, like we've said, on this podcast, Came from the Moon, dedicated to Destiny with Ryan. It's a ton of fun. It's really goofy. And, yeah, it gets out of hand. Go listen to us there if you like Destiny. Thanks so much for sticking around as we transition to the new site. We hope that you like it as much as we like it. And we look forward to talking to you next week, not about Sunshine, but about Super Mario Galaxy. Talk to you guys then. Bye.
It's been a while. as I outlined to you in your office, we would be very happy to have the chance of handling your new 12-inch long playing records, and I would like to see you again in your office early next week.